Access number 29536, Mr. Bert Scrivens, Reel 8. Now, so you left Cape Town after this rather pleasant interlude.
Yeah.
And same ship.
Same ship.
And where are we going now? What's the next bit of the voyage?
Well, the next bit of the voyage, we went on in the convoy round the Cape, and suddenly we were detached from the convoy, and we dropped into Mombasa, where we stayed out in the roads and refueled and rewatered. Apparently we didn't have enough of either to take us to our destination, wherever it was.
So you were now on your own?
We were on our own. We stayed there for 2 or 3 days.
You didn't get ashore though?
No way. Stayed there on our own, and then we took off on our own, as we discovered later, across the Indian Ocean, going as fast as the old tub would go. We had one alarm. One night, the alarm bells went, and being on deck, of course, we went straight to the rail. And there was a submarine alongside. We thought, now we're in trouble. On our own, submarine and so on. Fortunately, of course, it turned out to be one of ours. Presumably they wanted to know what the hell we were doing or where we were going. They took off and we carried on our way. And eventually arrived at Bombay. There we docked.
That's where you left the Almanzora.
We then docked, stayed on the Almanzora, because there is nowhere else to go, apparently. Spent a few half days ashore.
And what were your first impressions of, you know, of
I have never seen such destitution in all my life. I have never seen poverty like it, where whole families, all they had was maybe a charpoy, little bed, and a section of pavement that they lived on, and that's all they got. They had nothing else. Oh, a blanket or two, maybe. They had just nothing. I'd never seen anything like it. And, of course, we started to run across then, for the first time, the caste system. We had to be very careful there. Fortunately, we had a number of the original territorials who had been in the Indian Army or the Army in India, which is different, and they had put us wise to a number of the customs. So I, for one, was very careful not to offend. We did a bit of shopping there, saw for the first time the true Solar Topi, the Bombay type as we called it, which is a completely different shape and it's much thicker and had a very much nicer puggri around it. And we were told to get it by the troops who were serving there to get our knees brown. Which was the typical insult of the day. And we spent a few days doing just that. Then we were transshipped to little coastal ships, which were small, usually had French officers and Lascars, native crews. And we were jammed in tight, and I mean tight. And cockroaches as big as mice all over the place, terrible things. And we set off again in a sort of convoy.
The coasters, were you escorted or was it just the coasters?
Just the coasters. I didn't see an escort anyway. And we moved up then, still not knowing where we were going or why. And we finished up at Basra.
Now, what was that trip like? It sounds, it's quite a way, even though it's,
Yeah, it was. It was hot. It was stuffy. It stunk of curry. For my sins, I was put in charge of all mess decks. And I joined the ship's inspection every morning. I was the last one. And the ship was of a size that the captain headed it, assisted by, I don't know, one of his officers, then our CO, and the appropriate warrant officers, company officers, etc., etc. And I was the last one. And the captain went down forward to the mess decks and so on. And by the time I went down, the captain was coming up the other end of the ship. And it was my job to look at the mess decks and see that they got all their equipment, the ladles and spoons, camp kettles, mess tins, plates, whatever, on each mess deck. The whole place, as I say, stunk of curry. The crew were ever willing to make cups of chai for us. For money, of course. And we were everlastingly having a go at cockroaches and whatever. And that voyage went on and on and on until eventually we arrived at Basra.
Now this is November, 42,
is it? Yeah, about November. We stayed in camp for a short while.
Now, what were your first impressions of Basra?
It's a hole.
In what way? People often don't like Basra. I mean, what was it?
Well, we didn't see Basra much as such. We saw the desert outside. We were just camped and that was it. There was sand everywhere. Actually, I think we were at Sheba, which I equated to the Queen of Sheba. And I thought, well, this is where she lived. God help us. but it was not a nice place, as far as I could see.
Were you intense?
Yeah. We were always intense from here on. And eventually, after a few days, I know it's peculiar that I can only say after a week or so or after a few days, but time means nothing to the other ranks, as it were. You're just there, you're doing as you're told, you exist until you're told to move again. We then entrained and went via Baghdad, and we arrived eventually in Kirkuk, as we called it, Kirkuk, as they call it these days. But outside, at the head of the K1 oil line, I think they called it, there was a sort of pumping station there that extracted the crude oil and then sent it onwards to ports, I presume. That was truly a wilderness. We're in tents again, above the pumping station. They used to burn off the gases and so on that came up and stunk like hell. There was no vegetation. The hillside was barren. And somehow we had to erect tents, which we did in the end. We cooked with crude oil as a fuel. We were fed by Indian Army RASC, the meat was killed first thing in the morning and we ate it at night, and fresh meat is not good to eat. The whole place stunk of oil. It was barren. Kirkuk itself was about 2 miles away, I suppose, and had very, very pleasant living conditions for the Europeans who lived there in their compound, with water sprays going to keep the grass alive and so on. My first impression was, well, why haven't the native who had to walk to the river to get water, why haven't they revolted and thrown the Europeans out? It was nothing to see dead animals alongside the road. They ill-treated their animals terribly. And to be honest, Iraq is on the whole, and as a generalisation, I wouldn't trust them anywhere with anything. And Kirkuk was a desolate hole, terrible place, with nothing there except a few buildings, a dried up, almost dried up river. It was nothing to see a native killing a sheep alongside the road by cutting its throat and leaving the entrails there. Not a pleasant experience.
You were there during the winter, weren't you?
Yep.
What about the winter conditions and the tents?
Winter conditions. One occasion, within daylight hours, we experienced, and we were under campus, remember, we experienced every possible type of weather one could. We had snow, we had hail, we had rain, we had gales, we had brilliant sunshine. All within daylight hours, the same dawn to dusk. It was ruddy, awful. We didn't know whether to dress in standard khaki or in khaki drill. Whichever you dressed in, you were wrong. It was difficult to keep rain out of the tents. You could dig gullies around them and all sorts. But we were on hillsides, and the hillsides, as I said before, were absolutely barren. We had exercises there. And we used to go out with our...
I was trying to get you on, because I thought it was really cold there, and snow, and really bad...
It's cold. It's hot. It's anything you can imagine in that area. Absolutely anything. You didn't know. I was expecting, as the stories always rent, you know, that comes 11 o'clock Thursday the 14th or whatever, it's going to rain, and it'll rain for the next 3 months, you know. Doesn't happen. None of that happens. You get any kind of weather any time.
OK, now tell me about these exercises. What sort of exercises were you doing?
Well, we were defending, it would appear, the pathway into Iran and so on. One of the passes where the troops were sent was the Shemshamal pass, which was way up. It was bitterly cold. There was a hell of a wind blowing all the time. We were under canvas, and nothing would keep us warm. To get meals,
one had to go up into the passes. Would you?
Oh yes, we were up there. and stayed there defending the pass, as it were. There was a road went through, and we were camped sort of alongside it. We used to go and have to go to the cookhouse to get our meals. If one had a plate, tin plate, of course, other than a mess tin, and if you carried your meal in that, it was just likely that a kite-hawk would come down and wash it off your plate before you got to wherever you were going. And the meal would be cold by that time.
How cold was it in the mountains?
Very, but strangely enough, no snow that I can remember. And to start with, the first troops that went up there went up in shorts and shirts and so on. That was soon remedied. But it was.
How did you cope with the cold? Were you able to heat the tents or do anything?
Well, yeah, you ate in your tent. You scurried across to the cookhouse, got your meal, and back to your tent, and that was it.
But how did you keep the tent warm? I mean,
you just didn't. There was nothing to warm it. Just nothing at all. It's the only occasion where I saw, I swear this, water running uphill. Strange, but we were in convoy and we were travelling downhill. In other words, if you were to stop, you'd have taken the brakes off and the lorry would have gone forward downhill. And alongside the road was a stream. And that stream, the water ran uphill. I have no explanation for it. I actually threw something in the stream to make sure I was seeing what I was seeing. But it was there. Nobody ever believes me. We just stood there and said, it can't be. That is not right. You know, we must be actually facing uphill and we don't know it. But we weren't. We were facing downhill and the water was going that away and we were going that.
And you don't know why? Or what?
Don't know why. It's only a small stream. Have no idea, but it's the only time that I had seen that. I didn't spend very, very much time out there. My time, I was on duty to go there, do something or other, and come back again.
What would you be going up there to do?
Oh, something to do with stores, but what? I can't
MT
remember.
Still.
No, any kind. By this time, I'd been doing all sorts of jobs. I used to collect general stores from the Indians, such as methylated spirits, which were needed for lighting Coleman lamps and primer stoves and so on, paraffin, crude oil, rations, anything.
So you were no longer, were you still?
I was still a technical storeman.
And I was the MT one, but you
technically, but I didn't do it. I was just doing anything. Whatever job came along, I was given it, you know.
By now you were a corporal, I believe.
By now I was a corporal, yeah.
Did it make a difference, you know, being a corporal?
Well, you had that much more power. In other words, if you gave somebody an order, they did it. If you were a lance corporal, you'd probably think about it or argue with you. But a corporal, no, they took that. And we used to cook, or the cooks used to cook, using crude oil as the fuel, with trenches, with crude oil in a 4-gallon can at one side of the trench, water in a 4-gallon can the other side of the trench, small holes at the bottom, with probably a match or something stuck in it, to make sure that they came out in drops. The water came out faster than the oil, and it dropped onto a sort of half cone, which spread. I mean, you set light to the oil, and then the water splashed the oil up the trench a little way, but it was already alight, so it became a real roaring flame, if you adjusted it right. And you either had a trench on which you set your kemp kettles on, or trivets, as they would be, of cast iron folding, were made up into those. And then the other end, you arranged a chimney of sorts, because you got thick black smoke out of that. Consequently, the cooks always looked more like chimney sweeps than they did cooks. The roads out there were hand graded, and to get a the roads, they were dug by hand and then smoothed by hand to start with, and then a motor roller would go across to smooth it down finally. The only trouble was that the camber could be anything other than even. In other words, it could be flat one side of the road and very steep the other. And then they filled a tanker with crude oil, opened the taps at the back and ran along the road to let the crude oil go onto the road and soak in. And then it was rolled again, and that made a beautiful road. Except, of course, that the camber was most peculiar. And it was lovely until it rained. Then it was hell. By that time, I was riding a motorbike most of the time to do whatever I had to do or wherever I had to go. And there was a knack in riding a motorbike on that kind of road, especially when it was wet. One had to be in the right gear with the right revs.
I'm not sure. I mean, you'd always been keen on riding the motorbike, I think.
I had ridden motorbikes before.
You'd ridden the Osses one, hadn't you? Now, what were you doing on a motorbike? I mean, what sort of duty were you doing?
The motorbike was just a means of getting from here to there. If I had to go down to the supply depot, if just me, I'd go on a motorbike. Just a simple means of transport, as far as I was concerned. Rather than take a lorry, jeeps we hadn't got.
Now, what were you actually doing as a unit? You were guarding these passes, but was anyone actually trying to get through them, or was it basically a quiet period?
I suppose basically it was to stop the Russians going through to India. The old northwest frontier bit.
But Russia was in the war on the Allied side. But
it was wasn't exactly on the Allied side, was it? There were times when it wasn't. And of course, everything everybody forgets is that from 1920 on, Iraq was governed by British troops. We were a presence always in Iraq because of that threat of the Russians going through to India.
So anything happened, any of the stories, it just gives an idea. It sounds pretty awful.
It was pretty awful. As a slight guide, when troops went abroad, they were given in their pay a colonial allowance. If you were in Egypt, for instance, you got fourpence a day, colonial allowance, to take care of the hardships, whatever there were. And it went up in scale. The less facilities there were, or the worse conditions there were, it went up. We were in Iraq, you were on the top scale of 11 pence halfpenny, which for the army is a lot of money. That's how bad it was. It was really dreadful. We used native labour for
Iraqi workers who did our laundry under contract. That was another one of my duties. Every time anybody retorted to anything, Iraqi way. And you sat there as long as you could. Then you went over to another area where they had a sort of fountain of hot, fresh water, enormous natural sponges with soap and so on, and scrapers. Nothing else to call them. And they scraped you down with these scrapers, and huge rolls of dirt came out of your skin. I don't care how often you'd washed or showered or whatever before that, but these enormous rolls of dirt came out. They poured a bucket of water over you and gave you a sponge with loads of soap to go over into a corner and wash the parts of they hadn't gone to. And then you dried yourself off with the towel and so on, got dressed and went out, and you felt about 3 stone lighter than you went in. It was a gorgeous feeling.